Danelle Morton is on the line, a mom with a rather interesting and emotional story. Danelle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So if you would just kind of go back, I know you wrote a piece in the Boston Review just a little while ago about this whole situation that happened to you with your daughter. Fill us in. Tell us what the story was.
In spring of 2008, my daughter dropped out of school and started hopping trains, and she was on the rails for a year and a half. And it was very difficult to understand why she had chosen such a different and dangerous way to live. And she came back in Christmas of 2009. And in 2010, eight people from the traveling community, several of whom were her friends, died in a squat fire in New Orleans. And I'm a journalist by training, and I thought, if I could understand what drove those kids into that house on that night, and I could understand what drove them onto the rails like my daughter. So I asked my daughter if she would be my guide to this very secretive and suspicious underworld so that I could do this story. And 2 weeks after the fire, my daughter and I went to New Orleans.
And what did you find out in terms, you know, when you say these are kids who do this, I'm kind of stunned a little bit, because we tend to think these are, you know, old timers who do this, who hop trains and, you know, and hobos and the picture we have of them. But in fact, it's not.
That's a picture from the 30s. There's very few gentlemen hobos in sort of crushed top hats that are on the rails. As part of the research, I actually ended up spending some time with railroad cops, and they said that 20 years ago, the people they were taking off the rails, and even up until the last 5 years, were nothing but illegal immigrants coming from Mexico.
Right.
But now all they take off are people under the age of 30. There is a sort of, I can't understand how big the population is. My guess would be 25,000, 50,000 in the summer, of kids who have no moorings. They don't fit in with the job market. They haven't had much success at school, many of them, and they just light off into this kind of radical freedom.
Did you have any idea your daughter was planning to do this at all before she took off?
You know, for a long time she had been hanging out with the crowd that looked like this, but she was in college, and I thought the college was working to keep her here, but she was restless. You know, as Woody Guthrie says, the devil was scratching her heel, and she just left. You know, she said, I'm thinking of dropping out of college, but when she called me to tell me that, she was already in a van heading out of town.
No, and these people, obviously this is a community, as you said, they all seem to know each other, they all tend to stay in the same places, we're in the city together?
Well, they're a transient group, so they don't all know each other, but they all have this massive web of ways to connect. When they roll into town as a group, that one of them knows the coffee house or the bar where you can go and, you know, chat people up, and somebody will routinely offer you a place to sleep,
mm-hmm.
or you know, inside the house, a couch, or some place to throw down your sleeping bag in the backyard. And food is free; they get it out of dumpsters, and they beg for change in the streets to get beer.
And where do they? I mean, where do they end up? Your daughter came home, but I mean, where do these kids, you know, who do this, end up? Do they eventually come back? Do they just end up living on the street forever?
So, well, I mean, living on the street is an exaggeration. There's like a class society among them, meaning the initiate phase is called being an oogle. In fact, there's this website called Look at This F'n Oogle, where you can see pictures of the elders of the tribe post of the initiates in the initiate phase. These are kids who just broke free of their parents, and they're drinking like fools and making all this noise and causing all this trouble. But in New Orleans, there's kind of a permanent population of people who have jobs and live in an economy that doesn't require so much money, so they only have to work maybe 2 or 3 days a week to make their minimums. And they live in, a lot of them live in all the abandoned houses. In New Orleans, there's 43,000 abandoned houses.
And they just move on once the cops find them and force them out, they move on to the next abandoned house.
Yeah, I went, I met with two young women who had a beautiful squat, kind of had Tennessee Williams feel to it, you know, with tall red walls. And they had gone house hunting, meaning they had broken into 11 different houses and found one that suited their needs, and then they swept it out and moved in. And when I was talking to her, she pointed to $3 that were on a crate near the mattress on the floor, and she said she had that $3 sitting there for 3 days. In 3 days, she'd had no need to spend any money.
Do you have more of an appreciation for these people now than you would have before you started on this sort of, you know, journalistic investigation?
Yes, I mean, I see them as human. When my daughter left, I was enraged, you know. And when I would pass kids on the street who looked like the ones that she had gone with, I would be furious, you know, that they had snatched my daughter away. Yeah. Of course, she did it of her own free will. And my daughter asked me at one point, you know, now that you see kids on the street, do you want to give them more money than you did before because, you know, they're, you know, linked to her? And I said, no, I give them none. I give them none. But I was angry because my daughter was in danger, and I didn't think she understood the danger she was in.
And now?
And, well, she's not in it.
No, but I mean, now when you see these kids on the street begging for change, has your opinion changed?
I have much more of a sympathetic
heart. You do.
I realize a lot of them have come. I mean, my initial thesis was that this was an outcome of the decline of the middle class, that these kids, many of them, and this is true, have lived through the last 30 years of their parents' dreams being shattered by the edge of the economy, meaning, you know, they did the whole 30-year plan with a 30-year job and a 30-year mortgage, and all of a sudden they get fired, and the corporations raid their pension fund, and they can't find a way to pay the mortgage. And you hold out this middle-class dream to them, but you can't sustain it yourself. Now, that was definitely a factor, but when I got to know them better, there was so many generations back of mental illness and substance abuse that to say that it was that alone would be disingenuous. Mm-hmm. It actually was a combination of a lot of factors. And I think when people look at these kids and have this high moral tone about why don't you just clean yourself up, they're not seeing the humanity in them. And as I mentioned in the article, I was treated really well by them. I was treated with great deference, and a lot of people have big hearts.
Wow. It's a fascinating story. Your daughter now, because we've got to wrap it up, is she back in school? Has she decided to go back to school?
She hasn't quite made it back to school yet. Hasn't quite made it back to school, but I would say that doing this with my daughter has made a huge effect on our relationship because we had to trust each other.
Yeah.
And for her to allow me in there with her was a sign of great respect. So it has helped us.
Fascinating story. Danelle Morton, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Okay, thank you.